Yeah, forgiving your enemies, loving those, right? Loving those who are hurting people right now. That's hard. That's where I am. I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Staying consistent.
Mm-hmm. All those things. So pick one area, one thing. Because if you try to do everything, you'll fail.
And you can pick a new thing every day. Don't feel like I'm not, you know, it's funny, but what I'm saying is maybe something comes up and you think, oh, I got that one, or this is not, you know. Don't feel hemmed in.
And Katie, I'm going to do prayer requests.
Oh, okay, I was just sitting down to do that. Great, Jenna's going to do prayer requests. Yeah. So, that means you're ready? So this month we are talking about Philippians, the joy in the struggle. And Luke and I decided we should go through Philippians because we wanted to go through a book of the Bible and really dig in and teach people how to go about studying it. But before we get into all of that, here's my first question. Where do you find it easiest to obey God?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
There's like, okay, so some people find it easy to be where God, the commandment is to be hospitable. They're like, sure, come to my house, I'll host you, that's easy. Some people find it easy to be an encourager. Like, Vlad is very much an encourager, right? Like, some of us find it easier, like, oh, I don't really want people over, but I'll spend time with God. Like, I'll do that. So, like, what, we all have natural dispositions. What is your, where is it easiest for you to obey God?
You mean a location?
No.
Oh.
I have a...
Go ahead, Vlad.
Love language. Yeah. So, my love language. So, I like to do good gestures and kind deeds for people. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel good. And I feel, and I know that by doing good to people, that's doing God's work.
Yes.
So... by helping people, I feel like that's when we are, because, yeah, I fail 9 times out of 10 in the world. But when I know when I help people, like, do good gestures, I know I'm doing something good for them.
Yeah.
And, Vlad, I just wanted to say, you're not only filling your own bucket, you're filling other people's buckets,
oh, yeah.
Too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Appreciate you. Thank
you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lee?
When I give... Mm. Especially if I give to someone who isn't expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
You're very giving, though. I mean, it's not just money. You give in your actions too. You know, you really like to be that support for people.
What's that saying? It's the thought that counts.
Yeah. So the thought that counts, but not the thought that's left in your head.
Go ahead, Sarah. I was going to say, helping people out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't always have the bandwidth for it. I won't say that it's easy, just easiest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Making people welcome.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. And then we talked about how our community should shape our desires. Our desires, like, we should want what's best for the people in our communities, right? And then we talked about how we need fellowship to keep our joy.
Hold on.
You can still write. I'm just kind of recapping. This is just a recap, especially if you weren't here. But, like, we talked about the importance of you cannot keep joy on your own. So Philippians is all about how do you maintain joy when everything is going wrong. That's what Philippians is about. And so, like, you have to have fellowship. And then Paul celebrates the gospel of Christ being preached no matter what. He's like, yes, I know they're doing it out of selfish motives, but the gospel of Christ is still preached, and that I rejoice for. And then lastly, and this one is important because Philippians 2 starts with therefore, ends with living a life worthy of the gospel. So that was where we left off last time, where he says, live a life worthy of the gospel. And he says this also in Ephesians, live a life worthy of the calling you've received, right? So as we get into Philippians 2, he's going to say, therefore, and it's very important, you know, the old joke, whenever you see a therefore, you got to ask, what is the therefore there for? Uh-huh. So we had to go backwards before we can go forwards. As we continue, so we are getting into the therefore. We'll go this way this week. Luke, will you read?
Okay. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of the other.
Good. Awesome. So what I love here is the, like, if you have any encouragement, I'm not saying if you feel encouraged, you got anything out of this, if you have any encouragement from being united from Christ, if you have any comfort from his love, right, if you've got any of this, then make my joy complete, right? Here again, Paul is, as I mentioned last time, he uses the joy in its noun or its verb form 16 times in the book of Philippians alone. By being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. So I want to talk about this briefly because sometimes we talk about unity, right? People tend to take unity to prop up one person. Like, don't disagree with this person. That's how cults get formed, right? Like, and you can always tell when you have unity in Christ or unity around obeying what someone says, because the big difference is everyone being treated the same? Or is one person getting extra treatment or more money or a nicer bed or whatnot? So one of the ways you can always tell, right? And unity, it does not mean, this is where it gets hard, right? It doesn't mean you can't say, oh, I don't think that's right, right? That's not, boing. He's talking about the gospel, right? He's like, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind about the gospel of Jesus Christ, right? He's not saying you can't be like, he's not one, he's not saying being clones and robots of one another and you all have to eat the same thing and drink the same thing. Like, that's not the goal here. The goal is saying, if you're getting anything from Christ, anything at all, then you need to be of the same love and same mind that the gospel is important. Right? The gospel is the most important thing. And then following it up with, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, right? I find a lot of times in churches or areas where people want everyone to be unified, right? They leave off verse 3 or they never think about this. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Because usually they want people to be quiet so they don't have to deal with something. Yeah. Or so everyone just shuts up and listens. Right? I've experienced that in churches before where leadership is just kind of like, you're not showing unity, right? Like, you're not showing it. Like, no, that's not the point of unity, right? And a lot of cult leaders, I mentioned, I think, last week that I had watched, like, a couple documentaries on workplaces or Christian places that eventually became cult-like.
Ooh.
I'm not really... I'm not going to call them cults, but they became cult-like. And a lot of it was the leader was definitely not following do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Because, you know, they're like, ooh, I like this attention. I like this power. Right? When people get famous, when they get a little bit of that, they're like, ooh, I really like it when everybody likes me. Right? And so this is why the whole, like, being one in spirit and having the same love, they have to go together with do nothing out of selfish ambition. Right? They are completely tied together. And then rather in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. And this right here is one of the principles I take to the voting booth. I ask myself a lot, what is the best policy for my neighbor? Not what's the best policy for me. What's the best policy for my neighbor? Like, and a lot of times, honestly, what's good for your neighbor, because we're all so interdependent, will eventually be good for you as well. In the sense of, like, we know that immigrants boost the economy. Like, that's just a fact of life. Immigration boosts economy, right? And that helps everyone out. There's a lot of other complicated things that go with that that I'm not going to get into. But, like, studies have shown across the board, immigrants boost the economy. But, like, our question then becomes... When I vote, I really have to ask myself, and it really comes down to, especially with money, right? Because that's the one where it's like, ooh, if I vote for this person, they're going to give me a tax cut, right? Like, they're going to give my taxes cut if I vote for this person. Versus, if I vote for this person, my taxes may go up, but my neighbor's going to get the help they need. And it doesn't always come across super, I'll be honest, it's not always clear cut because politics, man, they're money, right? And nobody's really completely altruistic in politics. No one. right? But this is what I think of when it comes to voting, when it comes to politics, right? And again, it's not like a black and white thing, but it's something I always remind myself of, that my job is to be looking out for others' interests. And as a church, if we're all doing that, that means I've got, you know, all of the church looking out for mine. My job is to look out for others, and the rest of the church is supposed to be looking out for mine as well. Like, so I'm not, so it's a, like, yeah, sure, I'm looking out for Luke and Sarah and Vlad's interest, but at the same time, Vlad, Sarah, and Luke are looking out for my interest.
Everyone.
Yes. And so that's what makes
this
work.
It's a self-sustaining system.
It's a self-sustaining system, exactly.
Thank you.
So anyway, our encouragement, comfort, tenderness, compassion, etc., that from Christ should lead us to valuing others above ourselves. Because we know that Christ has got us, right? That's what it starts with. If you have anything from Christ, right? If you've got even just a little bit, you need to turn around and make sure that other people feel valued. And it all comes from Christ. And then that little bit, while I'm looking out for everybody else's, people are looking out for mine. I think that's what allows us to look at someone and say, like, yes, I need help, but you're already overworked, so I don't need help from you. Like, you know, and I don't mean it like, but there are times when we need to be like, no, you're at capacity. I'm like, yes, I need something, but I don't want it from you because you're at capacity. I would like to ask someone else. Like, and that's an important part of it, right? Because if everyone always asks Anna for help, and then Anna's just drowning, right? Because everyone's like, Anna's like, well, I gotta look to the needs of others and perform myself, and no one's looking out for Anna, then Anna's gonna drown, right? But if I'm looking at everybody around here, and I'm like, oh, I need this, maybe Anna can help me with this, and Vlad can help me with this, and da-da-da-da-da, it leaves it so that no one's burdened. Again, like Vlad said, it's a self-sustaining system.
It's fine.
Sorry, were we done?
You.
Cool. All right, Philippians 2:5-11, Sarah.
In your relationship with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father.
Beautiful. So this is what many consider one of the earliest hymns of the church. This is not Paul's original writing. This is a hymn that people were singing or quoting at church services.
Gotcha.
And so...
It does sound like a creed.
Yes, it very much, it's like, yeah. And so like Paul is quoting this. He's like, yeah, everybody knows this. So let's like, let's talk about this. So, and he's saying, have the same mindset of Christ. And this one, right, being in the very nature of God did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Remember when we talked about Philippians, we talked about that they were Roman citizens and they were like advantaged, right? So Philippians is written to a privileged group of people. So again, that whole do not consider that your privilege to be used for your own advantage. Like your privilege, great, but it's not for you. Your privilege is not for you. And then I love this. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. So what this word means is to empty out, the made himself nothing. He completely poured himself out to become a servant. It would be like, in a very small way, is the best example I could come up with, is if you decided that you wanted to save ants by becoming an ant, right, and living among them, and losing your human capacity, right, like, as well, right, and just adopt, like, I'm an ant now, right, like, that's the closest I can get to, maybe a bacteria, but becoming, to empty yourself out, right, to lose your abilities, because he did, then became obedient to God the Father, right, submission, and so, yes, he still had his power, right, obviously, and his authority, but he only used it when he was supposed to. He didn't just go around being like, you know, like on the cross, people are like, why don't you just call the angels to take you down? And he's like, because that's not my father's will. It's not a direct quote, but there you go. Yes, you were going
to
say
that. No, you answered it exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, okay. And like humble himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross, right? So Paul's like, if you get comfort from Jesus, you should be able to start doing these things and stop looking out for yourself, right? Stop looking out, oh, I'm privileged. Like, and sometimes we don't even notice it because when you have privilege, you don't notice not until your privilege, like, feels like it's insulted upon. You're just like, this is just the way the world works for everybody. And then other people are like, ha, that is not how it works for everybody. Like, I'll never forget as a woman, the first time I realized that the majority of men didn't look at a parking lot and like, you know, of how dangerous it was, right? Like of where you can park or I can't park next to a van, right? It just,
yeah,
those kind of things. Like, it,
oh,
it,
no, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, when I realized that most men never think about that, I was like, what? Like, I was just like.
We don't, and it's true, we don't.
Yeah, like.
I taught the mother of my children that.
Yeah.
She was, actually, it's funny you say that. She would just park anywhere.
Mm.
Top floor, in the back, where there's one light not working, and I'm like. I'm like, why would you park out of all these spots? Because
no,
I was gonna hit my car.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm there, and
no,
like,
no, you're good.
Yeah, well, maybe you. There's a chance you may not get to your car.
Yeah.
You know, like.
But yeah, those are those things we don't think of,
yeah,
right? Like I know when I was a kid, flesh was a crayon color that looked like my skin tone. I remember seeing that. They've since got rid of that because there are many different colors of flesh. But, like, and that's something that, like, it never occurred to me as a kid. Like, oh, why doesn't my friend, gosh, what was his name? Oh, whatever. Why doesn't my friend who is darker skinned have a car, you know, a crayon that says flesh for him? All right? And, like, even Band-Aids, right? They're designed so that, like, they don't show up. Except for that only works if you're similar skin tone, right? And you don't notice those privileges, those small things that also leads to really big things.
I always had that in reverse. I was too light.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the people that didn't have that skin tone noticed it.
Yes.
It was very
calm,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they noticed it right away.
Everybody.
Every time I had to go to church with a big giant Band-Aid on my arm, and it did not match.
Yeah. But I honestly think it's the environment, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say this. I never experienced racism until I got to Maryland.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me. Maryland
so,
is fairly racist.
Yeah, so in New York, like, I don't want to sound ratchet or ghetto, but.
You're fine.
In New York, I'm from the projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, excuse my language, I don't want to offend any race, but there's blacks, there's yellows, there's Chinese,
mm-hmm.
there's whites, it's a melting pot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even the Indians and the Muslims, that the Akis and the little poppies from the bodegas,
mm-hmm.
that work in the bodegas, excuse my language, but everybody uses the N-word fluently over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, what's up, man? What's up? The white people, the Asians, the Muslims, the Indians, there's no color over there. There's no, you're black. It's more like, hey, you're in the ghetto, I'm in the ghetto too. We're in this together.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when I came to Maryland, and I was young, so I openly used that word a lot because I still talk like that. Like, oh, what's up, ma? What's up, ma? I said that out loud, and people were like, I even got into some fights. But then, like, during that fight, they heard my accent, and they was like, you from New York? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, dude, I'm sorry, bro. Here in Maryland, we don't talk like that, bro. You should have said you was from New York. And I'm like, what? He's like, and they explained to me that, you know, technically this is a southern state. It's the beginning
mm-hmm.
of the South.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So,
really?
Yeah, Maryland is the beginning of the South. It's technically a
yeah,
southern
Harriet
state.
Harriet Tubman was a Marylander.
Yes,
yeah.
So was Frederick Douglass.
Yeah,
Maryland
so a lot of people don't know
state.
That. But Maryland is the South.
So Maryland is, one of the reasons I love Maryland is because it doesn't know if it's in the North or the South.
Yeah,
the reason is because Maryland wanted to secede.
Yeah.
But President Lincoln, and if you ever go to Fort McHenry, he took the cannons at Fort McHenry and pointed them at the city of Baltimore and said, you will not secede. Because Maryland was the only one that really didn't get a choice. Because Lincoln knew Like, you can't have the state that it surrounds your capital to fall to the enemy hands. So, like, Maryland didn't get a choice.
Yep.
So there was a lot of disagreement. So, yes, Maryland was a union state.
It was.
It did not want to be a union state.
Oh,
and,
that's
but that is also why, because we're right on that border, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, were able to escape to freedom. Who knows how many other people could, like, other African Americans could have been blessed us with lots of information and couldn't get out.
Yeah. Yeah, so I learned that a lot, but also, but then I it was a culture shock to me moving to Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I learned about Southern hospitality and that how big racism and slavery was in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
I learned about Annapolis. Annapolis
mm-hmm.
is the capital of Maryland. A lot of people, Marylanders, don't know that Annapolis is the capital
mm-hmm.
of Maryland.
Yeah, it
is. Yeah, it's stuff like that. It's stuff like that. So I was like, it was a big culture shock. And then I actually learned what a SPIC was, or a wetback was, because I used to work for the state.
Mm.
So I'm doing road work, and I get, and I'm there like, oh, I'm American, bro, born in New York, but I learned that.
Mm-hmm. I learned that
it's very
that.
Different here.
It's very different. I mean, I learned the term wetback on the bus going home from school.
Yeah, I didn't
and
know that.
At first, I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about. I can infer that that is a negative word. Like,
yeah. It took me to do blue collar work to understand what a spick was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So a spick is that little garden hole on the side of your house.
Oh,
that
spigot.
Little
yeah.
A spigot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Water
yeah.
comes out of a spigot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got across the river to get here, so.
I never would have put that together.
Yeah, we're spics. That's what they call us spics.
Yeah, it's a lot of.
It's,
I thought
but,
it was
it's very
expanded.
No.
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 Let's just be clear. No.
So just a culture shock, but I think it's the environment, because I was blind to that fact,
mm-hmm.
and to me it was normal.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I came somewhere else, I'm like, ooh, this is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I even changed my vocabulary.
Yeah, but you have to at places. But, like, and the point being, though, like, we are privileged.
Yes.
Just like the Philippian church were privileged. As Americans, we are privileged.
Yes.
And then certain of us, because of the way American society works, have more privilege than others. Unintentional. Like, it's not like you went out there and were like, I'm going to have the biggest piece of pie and F all of you, right? Like, that's not the goal here. What happened was the society said, these people are getting bigger pieces of pie, right? And these people just get littler pieces. And we were born into that. And that's my point with privilege, is you can't consider your privilege. You need to not to use it for your own advantage, but to empty yourself out for others. That's my point here about the privilege thing. All right. And then the ability to have the same mindset as Jesus comes from our comfort and encouragement from Christ. So remember, we're going all the way back here. Like, we started with, if you have any encouragement, any of this, right? Then do this. Have the same mindset as Christ. Where does that come from? By getting encouragement and comfort from Christ. So the ability to have the same mindset as Christ, right? To be willing to use your privilege for good. To be willing to be unified. To look out for the interest of others. Comes from our in comfort and encouragement from Christ. So, yes?
A little bit of that is like, I can't remember. If it wasn't for Christ, Christ excuses me, you know what I mean? I can go back, the mercy of Christ allows me to see the people, that could be me. In any given situation, I could be that person. You know, if it weren't for the mercy of Christ. And I don't mean it like, it's like, I am as guilty as anybody out there of any, you know, without Christ in my life, I don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My mom used to say that. She would be like, there go I for the glory of God.
That's what I was trying to say. I can remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly.
All right.
By the grace of God, go I.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, will you read this?
Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose.
Right. And the obeying he's talking about here is God. I'm not saying obey me, right? As you obey God, not only in my presence, but even more in my absence, continue. So what do you think it means to work out your salvation with fear and trembling?
That's a good question.
Go
respect the process and the journey.
Treat
it with respect as you would your mother and your father.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mom?
Yeah. Well, you're doing everything in God's. He's watching everything you do.
Yeah.
So you tremble and fear the Lord that you do it right or do it as He wills you to do it, you know?
My mama taught me that. The fear, like, because my mom, and a lot of people, like, you know, fear does not come from the Lord. And then my mom be like, well, he don't mean it. I mean, fear as in reverence, as respect. My mom would say, would you curse in front of me?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, nah. And I guess she'd be like, would you do something bad in front of me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, nah, you'd pop me right in the mouth. She's like, exactly. Mm-hmm. She's like, respect me.
Yeah. And I love what you said about respect the process, because the other part about this is to remember that it is a process.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, some of us grew up in churches where, like, salvation is a one-and-done thing, right? Mm-hmm. I said a prayer. I got baptized. Thank you. I'm done. Right? Like, check, check, check. Right? This reminds me, too, when I was in Spain learning about evangelism, and I learned a lot. I had the most fascinating conversation with someone who said, I'm a Catholic and an atheist. And I said, what? those are not synonymous. You cannot. They're mutually exclusive.
Right.
And then they were like, and then someone explained to me as like what they mean is, they were born in the Catholic Church, they'll be married by the Catholic Church, and they'll die by the Catholic Church, like die, you know, with the funeral rites and stuff. So like, I'm a Catholic, I've checked my boxes, but I also don't really believe in God. Like, it's this weird. I mean, it's a cultural Catholic.
Yeah, it's raging, the way he was raised.
Yeah, like I get it. Like, and I mean. That is not working out your salvation. That's like hedging your bets. Like, I'm going to do this because I was told that this is required for me to go to heaven if I'm wrong. But, like, I'm going to live my life how I want. Right?
Yeah.
That is not salvation. I'm going to tell you right now. You cannot. There's no hedging your bets with Christ. You cannot say, oh, God, I'm going to follow. I accept you as my Lord and Savior. But I'm going to live my life how I want because I don't really believe you care. Right? That does not how salvation works. Right? Salvation should change you completely. And I think so much of our problem in the U.S. is that for a long time, the dominant main cultural stream of Christianity was salvation is one and done. Like, you know, you get saved and you're done, like, you know, and it's like, I'm a Christian, I'm good, I did what I was supposed to do. But that's not what it is. It is a process, right, with fear and trembling to remind yourself of what you've been saved from, right? Like, there are times... I forget who said this quote, but it is pretty famous. The I'm not who I want to be, but thank God I'm no longer who I was. Right? Like, and then...
I feel like either we're on two separate pages or we're saying the same thing two different ways, and I'm not sure which it is.
Go ahead.
Salvation is a one and done in that you ask, you know, you... God saves you. It's nothing you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The work out your salvation is the growth as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Your actions are not what decides whether you are going to heaven or not. It shows that
you've been saved.
You,
yes.
But your actions will not save you.
Yes. Yes. So yes, that's a good way of clarifying it. Saying the same thing in both ways, but the. Your actions do not save you. And I think that's an important clarifying point. Nobody is good enough for God, period. Right? But I will argue that people who say they're saved but do not live out their life to have their lives transformed are not saved. Go ahead.
Can I actually just, it's kind of easy. It just hit me. It's like a recovering addict.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you're a recovering addict, they don't tell you, well, you're saved. It's not a one and done thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're not saved. You have to take it, what they tell you at AAA, take it day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So you treat the salvation the same way, one day at a time. We're going to mess up. We're going to fall back. But that doesn't take our salvation. But if you treat salvation like you just picked it up from the Dollar General and can't be wasted, then you got the next thing coming to you.
Yeah.
Remember, we're addicts to the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're addicts to the world.
Yeah, we are.
So salvation is AAA, right? Jesus is our AAA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go to Jesus every day, right? And we're going to sin and we're going to mess up, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we treat salvation just like addiction.
Mm-hmm.
it takes a day, but it is a one.
I love
done.
The idea of like we are addicted to the world
we
because
are
I think that is
world.
Just such a great.
I'm addicted to the world.
Yeah, it
that's
is.
That's why I said I fell
like,
110 times.
Yeah, and like and also I'll just say the one and done, like, or the one day at a time is so important because if you're like. If you start looking too much, like, wait, I gotta deal with this for how long, right? You get real discouraged. But if you're like, I just need to rely on God for this moment, for this time, like, it does.
Yeah, so I don't want to sound kind of weird, but yeah, our actions actually does.
Oh, it does.
It does
it definitely,
because I can decide whether
you
to
always
wake up and pray, or I can decide to do something that I used to do in my past life, like take a shot or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather
yes,
just wake
all
up.
All of our actions move us either closer to God or further away. But the world, it's like a stream, like a salmon swimming upstream. The world's goal is to pull you away, right? That's what the world, and you could stand still, and the world's just going to drift you off,
yeah.
Right? So, again, that's also what it means, because you can't get closer to God by standing still,
mm-hmm.
because life will just life at you.
Yeah.
And then lastly, what does it mean for you personally? I'm not going to make you share, but I really want you to think about where you are, your current life, in this current moment. What does it mean for you to work out your salvation if you're in trouble? Because that looks different for everybody. And it's real easy to say, like, oh, yeah, I got to make this a choice. Or, you know, the world, I'm addicted to the world. But it's like, okay, what do I need to do to stop that addiction? Like,
it's like, what is it, die every day?
Yeah, pick up your cross.
There
like,
you go, pick
mm-hmm.
up your cross. Yeah.
Currently, it's separating all of the heresy that I grew up with from the actual truth and trying to root out all of the mindsets that created that aren't actually leading me towards God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Fly, will you read this one? Excuse me.
Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky, as you hold firmly to the world of life, and then I will be able to boast on that day, on the day of Christ, that I did not run or labor in vain. But even if I am being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I am glad and rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me.
So as I was kind of digging into this, I will say, like, the do everything without grumbling or arguing. Man, that verse made me feel really beat up a lot. Like, because, like, I like to rant, right? Like, and sometimes, like, I feel like I just gotta complain, right? And all of this. And so I went into a deep dive on this study about the words grumble and arguing and the definitions and where these words came from in English and all this stuff. So first off, I'm going to share with you, this is a summary, okay? This is not a direct quote because there was just a lot. But grumble, the Greek word for grumble here, essentially means to be upset because you turned your expectation of God into a promise from God. Its root is in disbelief and anger towards God. So this is what the Israelites did in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
When like God was like, I'm going to take you to the promised land. And they stopped believing he'd get them to the promised land. Right? And they said, you just brought us out here to die. Or we're going to die of thirst because you're not doing your job. So it's turning your expectation of God. You're unagreed upon, for those of you in emotionally healthy relationship, you're unagreed upon expectation of God into something he promised you. That's what grumbling is. When you say, and this is coming from, if you remember from Philippians 1, Philippians thought there was a dangerous teaching going around that you're not going to experience any trials in this life, right? So, sorry, I don't know who that is, but that's what this is. So it's not just complaining, right? It's not just, I mean, yes, nobody likes it when someone complains all of the time. I get you. But this isn't Paul's point here. Like when he says do everything, and again, the do everything, he's talking about obedience to God without grumbling. Like doing obey God and not be like, well, God, like, the world sucks right now, and this is your fault. Like, fine, I'll, like, you know, give my 10% or do whatever, but I don't like it because I was promised a big house if I did that. And I'm not getting it, right? Like, that's what grumbling is.
Kind of like the elder son. Like, you know, I made myself a slave to do your stuff, and I got nothing.
Yes, that's a great example. I did all these things, and then I didn't get anything out of it. And it's like, well, it was all here for you. All you had to do was that, ask, right? And sometimes, instead of asking God, we go straight to grumbling. Why didn't you do it? And it is an interesting thing for those of you who've done, are doing the Emotionally Healthy Relationships course. One of the things I love in the expectations is the when Jerry goes, she's talking about how so often we'll say, well, they should just know. That's what I want. And she goes, that is a lie from the pit of hell. And it's just funny to watch this woman say that because she's just not very aggressive in demeanor.
I'm not sure she knows how to raise her voice.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I'm sure she does. I'm sure it's just kept not away from the camera.
Yeah.
She's just very aware she's on.
Yes. Can I just finish one thing and then you go? But like that thing, right? Because that's what we do is like, well, God should just do it. Right? And God never promised, as Sarah frequently reminds us, like, right? God is for, like, for our good, but he never says how good the good is going to hurt. I'm messing this up.
How bad.
Yeah. It's a C.S. Lewis quote.
We don't doubt that God has his best for us. We wonder how, now I've lost it too.
It's okay.
Basically, how the hurt's going to hurt.
Yes.
Right.
And, like, because God doesn't promise that it's going to be easy. So grumbling comes from when we're, this grumbling and arguing is towards God, right? It's like, you're not holding up your end of the deal. That's what this is. Like, God, you're not holding up your end of the deal because my life is really hard and I signed up for an easy life. Like, that's why I became Christian. Go ahead.
How painful the good will be.
There you go. Yeah, it is.
How
painful the good will be.
Then Jesus said, in life, there will be trials.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But a lot of people believe that, you know,
well,
it's supposed to be
say,
easy.
The man himself told you.
Yeah.
You know, I had it good.
Yeah.
I'm just now realizing that I totally misunderstood you last week when you said that the people of Philippi believed there should be no more trials.
Mm.
I thought literally it was like, we shouldn't have any more courts.
Oh!
And then I'm like, oh, now this makes sense!
Yes.
I was like, they just thought everyone should get away with anything? Okay.
We do need courthouses, trust me.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder Paul was talking to him. All right.
And so that is a great example of being clear in language and the importance of it, right? but that's what there is. And so I think this is really important because I know I've had this verse been told to me, like, don't complain. Stop complaining. Mm-hmm. Right? Stop complaining. Like, because there are some things, right, that you are allowed to complain about. There's a difference between whining and complaining, too. Like, you can go up to your boss and say, this workload is insane and I can't handle it. That is technically in a complaint. Right? So it's not complaining because, man, I thought this verse was telling me I just had to take everything with a smile. I don't know about anybody else, but growing up hearing this, that's what it was told to me. You just gotta do it with a smile. Like,
basically, you gotta be a yes man.
Yes, you gotta be a yes man, and that's not what this verse is about at all.
Well,
I feel so much better.
Clean up your room. I'm sorry.
But I didn't have to do it without, I didn't have to smile while I did it.
Anyway. When I was a kid, my dad, I don't remember what it was that he told me to do,
mm-hmm.
but, and I don't remember this, but it was told quite a few times in my childhood. Apparently, I folded my arms and I said, I'll do it, but I'm not going to like it. He said, I didn't ask you to like it, go do it.
That's exactly right, yes. Also, the historical backdating of grumble comes from a French word that means to lament. So it's not just they're lamenting against God in a very unhealthy way. So anyway, and then when you don't grumble towards God, then you become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like the stars. Because I was like, man, you're telling me all I have to do is not complain, which is a really tall order for me. And then...
Yeah, me too.
And then I'll shine like a star. Like, that's what this... Because it didn't make sense to me either. Because I was like, this is saying if I don't complain, then I'm a child of God. I know that's not right because there's salvation's involved. So, yes, But yeah, the whole thing is like, don't sit there and pick a fight with God because you'll lose, one. Like, and two, like, you're bringing all your anger about your unmet expectations when God's like, I ain't never said that. Like, you know? So this is why, that's how you come become like yourself, right? And then as you continue to hold firmly to the word of life. And then there's this part where, like, Paul's, like, being really honest here. Like, I want to know that I didn't labor in vain, right? My mom had a fun saying when I was a kid. Well, I overheard her telling adults all the time. Parenting is the only job you don't know if you did a good job until 30 years later. Right? Like, you don't know. And I would say that I'm pretty amazing. So I think she did a good job.
I agree, one out of three.
Yeah. No, my brothers are decent people, too. But, I'm amazing. They're decent.
The backpack goes that my grandma used to always tell me that. She was like, don't make me look like a fool out there.
Yes.
I never got that. And I would be like, what? And she'll be like, don't make me feel like, she's like, just don't make me look like a fool out there. She's
yeah.
Like, make me look like I got some damn sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, okay. And like, now that I got, it's crazy, now that I got my kids, that is the first thing I tell them. Like, don't make me, especially in school. And I understood it, and they hit me with that, but I guess the language barrier wasn't there, so I could explain it to them. And I'm like, when you act like a fool in school, I was like, your teachers don't look at you like, look at this kid. You know what they say? Gee, I wonder what his parents would do.
Yeah. It's true.
You know what I mean?
As a teacher, I can tell you. It is number one thing kid people say. It's the parents. That is what the teachers say.
Yeah. Who your mom? Or I would tell kids, go get your daddy.
And then you see your younger siblings, because I remember one of the kids in Katie's class was crazy. And then I realized that he had a younger brother in first grade that was even more crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, so it kind of hit me as an adult. I understood it.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you that teachers, the very first thought is your parents. When you act up in school, they're like, why aren't the parents doing anything?
Yeah.
If they've contacted you. I will say they will contact you first and see if it does anything. But then they just... Anyway, but that's... Paul's like... Paul, there's this very, like, I don't want to run in vain. Like, I'm in jail right now for this gospel and for you and all this because of this. And to be completely honest, I don't want this to be in vain. So in all of that, as you think about the interest of others, Paul's also saying, think about my interest here. Mm-hmm. All right. So obey God wholeheartedly, then you will shine like stars. Then you will become pure and blameless. The wholeheartedly. Which I love the Anna picked while I'm waiting today for worship, because it's that while I'm waiting, because waiting is one of the hardest things, right? Like, but I'm going to worship while I'm waiting. Like, I think of the world today and pick a country, I feel like, at this point. But there's so many, like, bad people in charge in the world right now, right? And one thing my sister-in-law said when I was visiting California was, you know, despots die. Right? And it's like, because there are things, right? I think of, like, Hitler died, right? Like, oh my gosh, my brain is blinking. Who's the guy in Russia? Stalin died, right? Putin will die, right? These people die. Like, they do not outlive God. But my point being is there are times when I look at what's happening in Chicago right now to immigrants and citizens, right? Because they're just doing it. They're just drinking. Who's brown? Like, you're brown? We're taking you, right? Like, when I see and read the reports of what's happening, like, it's so easy to despair. And I'm so angry, right? Like, there's just mix of anger and despair because I'm just like, what on earth? Right? And I don't live in Chicago, and it feels like there's not a lot I can do, right? Like, but outside of saying that's wrong and engaging with people who want to talk with me. But, like, I know that, like, my job is to obey God wholeheartedly, right? Like, if it comes to it, it's to provide shelter. ICE did show up in our my school's neighborhood this week. None of my kids were picked up, but, like, I know, like, if it comes down to it, yes, I will offer shelter, like, to someone, you know? And I know that is something I can do if that happens here. But, like, there's also this waiting of when I'm not talking about politicians, because they're all, like, politicians are in it for themselves. Like, they really are. There are a few of them who are not. But I would say the majority of them, they want money, right? Like, they've got their own interests covered. But when will the American people wake up and be able to say that this is wrong? Like, when will we come back to at least having an agreed upon, this is wrong, this is right? Like, you know, and wake up and say, hey, what we're doing to people of brown skin is not okay. Right? And there's a part of me that's like, I don't like waiting for that. Right? Like, just do it. Right? And like, it's so easy to be like, I want to pick a fight, you know? Like, and what God says is like, you got to love them, you know? And I can't even imagine if I don't have friends that live in Chicago, really. But like, if it was someone, my friend or someone I loved or someone I knew that they had taken, and they're like, you want me to love that person? Right? Like, I mean, I'm just thinking about the reports that came out about the ICE agent who lied and shot a woman and unprovoked 6 times. Like, and I have the body camera footage of it, and discounts what he said. Right?
Bullets, right? So you're still alive.
Yeah, they were rubber bullets. But
they
still.
I've been told you're supposed to shoot rubber bullets at the ground and let them bounce into somebody, and they shot point blank.
You didn't see the pastor that got hit in the head?
Yes, yeah. The pastor got hit in the head. Yeah, it's real bad.
They shot him right in the head. Popped his ass right in the head. He dropped like a sack of potatoes.
It's a pepper ball, so then his head was just covered in a cloud of pepper, of mace.
God bless him.
Yeah. It is bad. And
I don't even think he was talking, I think he was just looking up and bow.
Yeah, it's real bad. And I look at that because, like, you know, I feel very isolated of that. Like, Maryland is not being affected. Again, Maryland has this weird, as we talked about with the Civil War, this weird kind of thing because we're also kind of where the president is, right? So there's this weird thing. Not to say that it won't come here.
He's threatened Baltimore.
Yes, sir. Everybody hates. But my point, hold on. I don't want to get too far in this rabbit hole. My point being is what I am called to do as a Christian is to love those people wholeheartedly. And that's...
You're talking about
the ICE. Yes, the people who are hurt. And the people who are... It's a lot easier to love someone who's been hurt than to love the person, in my opinion, than the person who's doing the hurting. And, like, that's where I, like, where it says obey God wholeheartedly. And, yes, there are sometimes love... means saying what you're doing is wrong. I'm not saying you need to go up and give them a puppy or something. Like, that's not what love is. Right? Like, but, like, I have, like, I as more and more as I've been studying scripture and as we've been reading, I've become more and more convinced, right, that yes, we have to stand up for what's right and what's true, but what comes first is the love for the other person. Mm-hmm. And if we cannot tell people you are wrong, you know, we cannot without loving them in a way that it doesn't work otherwise, because then we just get angry and violent. The only prophet God ever called who didn't want the job was Jonah. And Jonah is an example of what not to do. Like, right? Everybody else cared about the people.
Yeah.
Right? And you can't, because Jonah, he did it for like 3 days. That was all he did as his prophecy. He walked through the town for 3 days, gave the shortest sermon ever. It was 4 words in Hebrew. It wasn't like he didn't even tell them to repent. He just told them Nineveh will be destroyed. Like, and then they were all like, maybe we should repent.
And then he went on a hill and just went.
Yeah, and like waiting for it, right? Jonah was but we are so much like Jonah. Like, fine, you want me to preach to them? I'll preach to them. You gotta go to hell, and I'm happy about it. Right? Like, we are so much like Jonah. And what we're really called to do is be like Jeremiah, who weeped and grieved and was like, I love you all so much, and I love Jerusalem, and we're all going to be destroyed because of what you're doing. And that's the hard thing. Go ahead, Kelly.
Isn't that on our shirts?
Yeah.
Abound in love, yeah.
No,
don't be a Jonah.
Yes. Don't be a Jonah is the, yes, our original shirts have don't be a Jonah, right? Because Jonah is the what not to do. And I think there's so many of us today, so many Christians that are, that want to be like Jonah in that. Like, I don't want to have to love you. I just want to tell you, you need Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Or you're going to hell. Like, right? Because, like, well, you know, like, wash my hands. Like, you're good. I'm good, you know?
I love Christians.
Because we have to do, we have to come from a place of love. We have to come from the place of, I legitimately want you to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, you're wrong and I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's why love has to come first, like
that
we talked about. Yeah. Right? Like, it has to come from the, wow, think, like, all of this terror you're doing, right? Think about how good you could be for the world if you were truly saved.
Oh, I don't know.
That's what you have to, and that's what, like, this obey God wholeheartedly, then you'll, because that's, when you come from love, right, everything changes. It's, yes, I know Martin Luther King Jr. had his faults, but one of my favorite quotes from him is, hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. Right? And so this is what we're called to do, that obedience. Oh, man, I got all riled up. Now we got to kind of bring it down for the end. Mom, will you read the Philippians 19 through 24?
I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I also may be cheered when I receive news about you. I have no one else like him who will show genuine concern for your welfare. For everyone looks out for their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him as soon as I see how things go with me. And I am confident in the Lord that I myself will come soon.
Good. All right, so this is kind of like the ending of, remember, this is a letter, right? So it kind of feels a little weird. Like, he's talking about obedience, and then we're going to Timothy. But the important thing, like I said, and if I was doing a normal sermon, like, I would cut this out because I don't feel like it's the meat and potatoes, right? Like, this is, you know, kind of like, you know, your dessert or, like, it's important because it's scripture, but it's not, like, the biggest important thing in the verses. But as we're going through, we're studying the whole book, and we want to address this. So, one, this really shows us that Paul wrote the letter, for one, because he is talking about the people he's with. Like, it is not a, this is not a sermon, it's a letter. And I think that's important to remember as well. But I also love the, I have no one else like them who will show genuine concern for your welfare. Again, he has that whole thing, looks out for their own interests, what I just told you not to do, not those of Jesus Christ. But he is a son with his father with me. And remember, Paul was single and celibate, and like, he was very much on his own, right? Like, when he, you know, and all of this. And so, like, God provides family as we follow him. And, like, it's hard because, and I'm not saying, please don't misunderstand that, I'm not saying a wife or a husband. Like, I'm not saying that kind of family. I just mean, like, God's family is designed so that you can have, you know, more mothers or more brothers or more sons or daughters, whatever that looks like.
Polygamy?
No.
Oh.
No.
Siblings.
Like
a community.
I think the only word I didn't say was wives or husband. I would say more fathers, children, mothers, like, right? And that community is important, right? Because Paul could not have been married. And if he was, he would have been a terrible husband, right? In the sense of, like, he was always absent. He was always in jail. He was doing good work. Don't get me wrong. And he's a great person. But that's not really what a wife, especially in that time period, needed from somebody, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, but so Paul didn't have a family. But God still gave him those he saw as sons.
That's sad.
It's not sad. You're missing, like, that's the whole thing, is that his family was the church of God. Right?
Oh, wow.
Facts.
That's what our family is supposed to be. Yes, sir.
Just reminded me of when we were on our retreat. There was a point where I just needed some time away from everything. And I went to my room, but I could hear everyone laughing and kids running around, and I was just like, we have a family.
It sounded good.
Yeah.
It sounded like when I was a kid growing up, going to Thanksgiving, whatever, you know, we'd be in the... For a period of time in my life, my sisters and I were the only grandkids that were, like, consistently there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of single aunts and uncles who didn't want kids around. So, being out in, you know, in the offshoot room with our tinker toys and stuff, and hearing everything was semi-regular occurrence. We didn't mind. It was all boring grown-ups out there.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All right, and then the ending, Lee, if you'll read our ending.
But I think it is necessary to send back to you
Epaphroditus.
Epaphroditus.
Brother, co-worker, and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I am all the more eager to send to him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad, and I may have less anxiety. So then, welcome him in the Lord with great joy and honor, people like him, because he always died for the work of Christ. He risked his life to make up for the help you deserve. You yourselves could not give me.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I love this. And he's like, I'm sending him back. And, you know,
and
Paul
says he was a Greek.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was Greek. He was definitely Greek. Mm. And like, he was ill and he almost died. And I love when Paul said, had mercy on him and not only on him, but also on me. To spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Right? Because I think sometimes we get, like, I made a joke the other, last night when we were playing Marvel. Winston started coughing and I said, don't die. And then I, at one point, I was like, yeah, your death would be very inconvenient for me. Right? you know, and I say that in jest, but at the same time, like, that acknowledgement that it's okay to be like, you know, God's mercy on you also blesses me. Mm-hmm. Right? Sometimes that feels selfish. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it's okay to be grateful, to acknowledge how God's mercy on someone else makes us feel. Because, like, sometimes I'm like, I am so grateful God took care of that for you. Or I'm so grateful God healed you. Like, and it's okay to really back, because then you're like, oh, I made it about me. Mm-hmm. No, you're making it about God. Right? Like, it's still, like, giving God glory. All right, so here's my thing, because we're talking about wholehearted obedience. This is what this whole thing really, if you had to boil this down to, it's all about wholehearted obedience. Because you get encouragement of Christ, obey him. Because, you know, do it without grumbling, do it without saying, God, you were supposed to do this for me. Like, it's not a tick for tack. So this whole thing is about wholehearted obedience. So what is one area in your life that you need to obey without grumbling? And it could be the Sabbath. It could be giving. It could be being hospitable. It could be standing up for truth. I don't know.
I said every area.
Well, you got to pick one to start with.
Listen.
Well, you're not gonna change every area today. You're
what
just
are
not.
The areas again?
Well, there anything in life, giving, Sabbathing.
Sabbathing.
Trusting
God.
Just any
generosity
that comes to mind.
Yeah, hospitality.
I like
listening
that.
To him.
Listening to him. Anything. Like.
Yeah. Look that.
Waiting on him.
Yeah, waiting on him is a good one.